This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good news, one of my friends here poked me back. I think things are getting serious.
Ooh.
We're going to poke each other a few times back and forth all night.
The pokes are coming back, but the green bubbles are here to stay.
Welcome to Millennial, the home of pretend adulting and real tech talk. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
Sometimes I just need to like spread out my words. Like right there, I just went real tech talk. I'm Andrew because I'm so excited to be back after a week off. Real tech talk. I am Andrew. We are talking this week about tech topics.
Sometimes it feels good to just take a deep breath.
Yeah, it's the music. It's the Celsius energy drink. I'm just fired up. Meta is limiting political content in feeds now. And this is actually turned on by default. This is the first tech topic we wanted to talk about today. Quoting NPR, Meta said in early February that Instagram and Threads would stop recommending political content from accounts that users don't already follow. The change started unrolling for users last week, Meta confirmed to NPR, and Instagram users quickly started noticing that their default settings had changed to limit content that is likely to mention governments, elections, or social topics that affect a group of people and/or society at large. The change has caught even the most online off guard, with many users criticizing Meta for limiting political content in a year where the US and several other countries will be holding pivotal elections, and for doing so with relatively little warning. And many noted that Meta's definition of political content, potentially related to things like laws, elections, or social topics, appears rather broad. The company has refused to further clarify what exactly constitutes political content under its cryptic definition. I'm kind of annoyed by this change, and this is one reason I wanted to talk about it today. What doesn't sit right with me is this being on by default, and they didn't even announce that it was happening unless you happen to catch one of these news articles. So if you were to go into your Instagram settings right now, you would see that limiting political content is turned on. But nobody received a notice about this suddenly happening. This should have been opt-in with a pop-up window asking you. And I think most of us probably would have said yes.
Mm-hmm.
But after years of being fed political content on Meta products, to suddenly have that reduced and not being told that it's being reduced is a little shady to me.
I feel like they do this a lot with new features, though, or options that you don't even realize you had. I'm thinking specifically about the ability to snooze suggested posts for 30 days that I at least found out about on this show. It just feels like they hide a lot of these features. And even then, it's so hard to navigate the settings sometimes and even find where these on-off buttons are.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's the issue of what exactly are they hiding? So they said potentially related to things like laws, elections, or social topics. Social topics is the big red flag there to me.
Right.
Are we going to go into Pride Month and there's no Pride Month coverage via the recommended posts?
Yeah, or a normal user is going to get censored because they dared to talk about a social issue or voice their concerns about something. I mean, it sounds I guess in a way, it kind of sounds nice on the surface level to, you know, be able to opt in or opt out of news coverage. But
right.
You also have to think about the long-term ramifications, because maybe you won't see as many fake news posts. But that also means that when something big happens, you might not be aware of it if it's not in your circle already, in your echo chamber, if you will.
Right. So to be clear, this will only limit the amount of recommended posts from accounts you do not already follow. So for example, it seems like Meta is not going to reduce the number of posts you see from the New York Times if you already follow the New York Times. But I kind of jumping off of your point, Pam, this also really sucks for political content creators on Meta platforms, because a lot of their traffic comes from discovery, comes from their posts being recommended to users who don't already follow them. Now they're being shot in the foot because suddenly Facebook has decided, oh, you know what? We're not going to recommend political content. And then there's also the concern of, like, how long is this going to last? Is this forever? Are they going to undo this later this year after the election? They always change their thinking with these types of things.
I guess what I don't understand is why this wasn't just a simple pop-up one day that was like, hey, new feature alert. Would you like to limit political content? Yes or no? By the way, you can change this in your settings at any time.
Right.
Also, I just wanted to point out, because I had this issue and I saw other people online having this issue. When I went in and tried to turn this off, my app fucking died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I couldn't even change it.
It Whoa. Died. It's just like, no, don't touch me. Leave
yeah,
me alone.
Yeah, I mean, it just shut the fuck down. So I was like, do I get to turn it off?
Wow. They're not even giving you the option, Laura. That's really no. bad.
They were like, you really don't need to see this. This is bad for you.
I do remember a couple years ago at this point, I looked at like one Melania Trump post, or what's Trump's daughter again?
Ivanka.
Ivanka, thank you. I looked at like one Ivanka family photo of her and Jared and the kids. I was like, oh, that's nice. And then I moved on with my day. But then I start looking at my discovery tab on Instagram. It was all Ivanka Trump posts all of a sudden. And I looked at one damn post. That algorithm is ready to jump and feed you more.
That happens to me all the time. It's like, I don't actually want to see this. Actually, I liked my discovery page before you went and fucked it up.
Yeah.
With this one random thing I needed to look up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like on Spotify, you go and listen to one song because maybe your mom wanted to hear it when you were hanging out together. And then suddenly it's like, oh, you definitely want more Frank Sinatra now.
Although,
because you listened to that one song. Huh?
I actually just found out the other day that you can actually turn off like things from showing up in your taste profile on Spotify.
Really?
I have heard about this. I might need to use this.
Yeah. It's in like the, if you click on the three dots, I think it is, like if you're listening to something, it'll show up. It'll say, oh yeah, exclude from your taste profile. So like I was working on a playlist, spoilers for the show, and I was listening to like The Order a million times. It's like, this is gonna mess up my Spotify Wrapped. And then I realized that this was a feature and I was like, this is great. Thank you, Spotify. That's nice.
And of course, you can also go into a private session if you want, which I actually use, because sometimes I pull songs for clients, but these aren't songs I listen to. But you could also use this.
They won't track the minutes and the hours on a private session.
Yeah, but if I'm just pulling songs for work, okay. I don't care about that.
Yeah, well, I care.
You care. You want every minute logged on your Spotify.
Yeah.
No, but like if you're feeling really depressed one day and you're playing like the Sad Girl Bops playlist on Spotify,
on
maybe
repeat.
You don't want your friends seeing that. Yeah. Or you
just... So I turn off my listening history.
Do you, Pam? I think I spy on you on Spotify from time to time.
No, I did for like a hot minute. I was like, I don't really care that much. Like it was one person that texted me. He's like, are you okay? You've been listening to this one song on repeat the whole day. It's like, leave me alone.
Can I tell the listeners what you were listening to one day ago? I see it right now.
Well, what was I listening to one day ago?
My gosh.
Are you scared?
Blast.
No.
The Veronica's Gothic Summer album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I went through all the new music that's been backing up. That's the new album that just came out on Friday.
I see one of my friends who has a child was playing Baby Shark 12 hours ago, meaning like 6:45 a.m. this morning. Parenthood. Anyway, well, I'm not thrilled with how Meta has rolled this out. If you want to disable this censorship, go to your Instagram profile and tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner, open settings, scroll down to what you see, the what you see section, and click on content preferences, then open the political content page and turn on the don't limit political content option. It's unclear if this controls Threads. I presume so, because Threads is based off of Instagram. Also worth noting, you can't mess with this on Facebook.com or the Facebook app. Facebook's just deciding behind the scenes, and you have no choice. I guess ultimately it is a good decision, because as Rebecca said, who's listening live, if it keeps my dad from seeing political content, I'm not mad at it. And that really is a big problem.
Oh my God. This is okay. So y'all remember there was a time where it was very trendy for people to set the parental controls on their parents' TVs to not let them watch Fox News. This is the 2024 version of that. So steal your parents' phones and turn this shit on so they don't get any political ads and they don't have any like social media meltdown rage fests.
Yeah.
This is one good use.
Yeah, well, truly, it is nice that people won't be led down political rabbit holes now with this turned on by default, because that has been a very real problem. By the way, you guys, let me check on my mom's Facebook feed really quick. Oh, no, she deleted it. Thank God. She fell for one of those memes where it was like, copy and paste this and you suddenly won't see ads on Facebook. I'm like, Mom, come on.
You're
better than this. you know better. I almost texted her, but I didn't want to. Somebody must have told her because it's gone. Yeah. I guess she's getting to that age.
Probably stings more coming from you, the tech kid in the family, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess she's getting to that age where she starts to fall for that stuff, but oh well.
No, I definitely feel like I've noticed a couple of similar things with my parents where I'm like, oh no, like that. Do we need to revisit this? I won't put them on blast because I don't want to embarrass them, but.
Another big one has been like simply posting a message on your feed means Facebook no longer owns the rights to your photos shit. I hereby declare Facebook no longer. Like, come on, people.
Mark Zuckerberg does not own my pictures.
Anyway, they write it in all caps, so it's definitely legal.
But also the number of people our age that I have seen put that up or that fell for that originally. Do you guys remember that was a big thing on Instagram for a while when I think it was when Facebook bought Instagram? And everybody was posting, I do not give permission to Facebook for Facebook to use my photos.
I don't know how people fall for that stuff, especially our age. Like, you must know better than this. Come on. I guess they're like, you can't hurt, but it does hurt because we're judging you behind the scenes.
Right.
Well, Andrew was definitely right. We are doing quite a bit of tech talk today. So jumping right into things, we're going to talk about the United States suing Apple. That's right, the maker of your iPhone. Last week, the U.S. Department of Justice, along with 16 states, filed a suit against Apple for violating antitrust laws, specifically around allegations that Apple has built a monopoly with its locked-down iPhone ecosystem. It really just boils down to allegations that Apple has deliberately created friction between iPhone and Android users, making it harder and more expensive for users and developers to leave the Apple ecosystem. So, what did y'all think of this? Did we think this day was ever going to come? It's not the first time that the government has tried to force Apple's hand. The FBI has definitely tried to force their hand before, unsuccessfully. But this seems a little different. It's coming out of the Justice Department.
Yeah, and they make a lot of different accusations, some of them more warranted than others, yeah. I think it's nice to see, because I do think big tech needs to be spooked. Even if this case falls apart completely, parts of it get thrown out, it's nice to see the government breathing down Apple's back. You know, this also echoes an antitrust case that they levied against Microsoft back in the 90s, mm-hmm. because Microsoft was taking over the market. It's different in a lot of ways. For example, Microsoft had over 90% of the market cornered back in the 90s when it came to the operating systems that people were using. In this case, as you're about to bring up, it's not as they're not dominating as much in the US, but I like to see this. And the EU has been on Apple's case in recent years now, and they've made some real differences, as we'll talk about in a little bit.
The Justice Department saying that rather than respond to competitive threats by offering lower smartphone prices or better monetization for developers, Apple would meet competitive threats by imposing a series of shape-shifting rules and restrictions in its App Store guidelines and developer agreements that would allow Apple to extract higher fees, thwart innovation, offer a less secure or degraded user experience, and throttle competitive alternatives. It has deployed this playbook across many technologies, products, and services, including super apps, text messaging, smartwatches, and digital wallets, among many others. So that is a quote lifted from the first page of this lawsuit. It goes on to cover a number of different allegations. It is like 88 pages long, so it's not all that long. And it's pretty easy to read, but they're citing things like inconsistencies. For example, they point out that Apple has invited third-party investment on the iPhone, or rather when the iPhone was in development and invited third-party investment on it, but then ultimately imposed these tight controls on app creation and distribution. It's also categorizing smartphones themselves as a platform.
It's a public utility now.
Yeah.
We need our phones, period. It's a public utility and should be regulated, at least to an extent, by the government, because we all need these. Just like electric companies became regulated, water became regulated. Like, there needs to be regulations because of how dependent we are on these smartphones now, no matter who makes them.
Yeah, I think that like that is where it gets fuzzy for me, right? Because as long as you're able to use the phone to communicate and say, look up important information, how to get somewhere if you're lost, something like that, then I just kind of feel like that is the most important part. And I don't know how well this is going to hold up, because I think a lot of what they're referring to kind of feel like extra features. And so to me, like, the line becomes blurry then, right? Because as a public utility, you're just talking about basic necessities. Somebody doesn't, like, I'm thinking about some of these apps that were exclusively only available in the Apple Store for a while. You don't necessarily need something like Clubhouse, but you do need to make sure that your phone is reliable. And so that is important. And they do need to make sure that that's regulated. And also that involves like phone-to-phone communication, right? They shouldn't be messing something up between you and another provider for a while because Apple was only available on AT&T, for example, or you and another smartphone user that is not Apple.
Right. And kind of related to that point, Pam, this series of allegations really rests on the core idea that the principle of antitrust law is that it's not per se illegal to build a monopoly position, which is what the DOJ is saying Apple has done here, that in the smartphone market, they have built a monopoly position. That in and of itself is not illegal. However, they do say it is illegal to use monopoly power to make consumers worse off. And that is a large portion of this document, is really talking about how Apple makes it really hard for people to leave their smartphone platform As somebody who, you know, lives with an Android user who used to have an iPhone, I can attest to this. It was kind of a pain in the ass for Mark to move everything off of his iPhone over to his less expensive but equally quality Android.
Feature packed.
Right?
Yeah.
And actually, I want to point out, Nicole in our Discord just gave me a great reminder about this. Nicole says, Laura, I did think about the issue Mark had with not being able to use his Apple card because he didn't have an iPhone. That's a scenario I think is a problem. Yes, it is. So recap here. We all got excited about the Apple card because it was tied to a high yield savings account that had and still has a really favorable, return on the money that's deposited there. So I got one. I encourage Mark to get one. He gets his card in the mail and he is unable to activate it because he doesn't have an iPhone.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
The fact that he was able to go through the whole process to apply for a credit card and there was no gut check to be like, hey, do you have an iPhone, by the way, because you can only use this on your iPhone. Also, it's dumb because it's tied to a Goldman Sachs account. So why does somebody need an iPhone to activate this card at all?
That's especially shitty, too, because a lot of times with credit card campaigns, there are monetary incentives for people that help open these accounts. Mm-hmm. So somebody wanted credit for Mark and other people like Mark opening an account, even though they knew that they weren't going to be able to use that card.
Was this brought up in the lawsuit, by the way? This card situation?
I actually didn't notice this in here. I will be honest, I've only skimmed it at a high level. I haven't had a chance to sit down and read the whole thing. I didn't see anything about this, but they definitely talk about the wallet being an issue that if you set up all of your cards in your Apple wallet, it's actually super convenient because you can have all your cards in that place, but you can also have all your tickets for events that you're going to, and you can transfer Apple Cash to people that way, the same way you would transfer to Venmo, and it's all in one place. But the second that you're trying to move to another phone, it's just a much more painful process to transfer those things. I haven't had to do that personally, so I can't speak to that. But apparently it's just another reason why people are finding it difficult to navigate away from iPhone when they want to. And I think the whole point is that iPhones are just more expensive hardware. And if people are wanting to move to a cheaper alternative, seems like Apple is intentionally creating friction to make that harder, to disincentivize it from happening.
Apple did say, in response to this lawsuit threatens who we are and the principles that set Apple products apart in fiercely competitive markets. If successful, it would hinder our ability to create the kind of technology people expect from Apple, where hardware, software, and services intersect. Now, one great thing about Apple, like they're saying in this statement, everything does work really well together. You get a text on your phone. It goes to your iPad. It goes to your Mac. I love texting. I bet we all love texting from our Mac. It's so easy. Mm-hmm. I tried Android for like an hour and not being able to text on my Mac ruined it for me. And that's not really Apple's fault. Well, maybe it is. But I loved that. Same thing with photos. You take a photo on your phone, I can look at it on my Mac immediately. AirDrop, amazing feature. Send big files back and forth to all your devices. You can put an iPad next to your Mac, and truly like magic, you can then use your mouse and keyboard from your Mac on your iPad. You just move your mouse over to the iPad screen and it pops through. There's lots of magic like that where Apple really shines. So I get it, but they are hypocritical in a lot of ways too when it comes to security. And that's something that's actually brought up in this lawsuit. Apple only cares about security for as long as it benefits them. And then once it could potentially negatively impact their bottom line, they don't care about security anymore. Case in point, they allow SMS to exist on the phone, which is an insecure messaging technology that we all use to receive our security codes and receive messages from Android. It's not secure. Android has a secure messaging protocol called RCS, but they have refused to integrate with RCS. However, that will change later this year, thanks to the EU. So, like, Apple is still hypocritical. I totally agree with that. On the other hand, there is a certain beauty with Apple products that they do all work together very well, and they want to keep everything working together very well, but only in the Apple world. They don't want things to work together very well with Android, because then you might switch to Android.
But the thing that I think is so funny about this is that in a lot of ways, well, in most ways, actually, I think you can argue that Apple would not be the titan that it is today without Microsoft. Microsoft bailed Apple out back in the day. Not to mention when the iPod first came out, most people did not have Apple computers. So the iPod had to function with PCs because you needed a computer to use an iPod.
Well, and funnily enough, the DOJ brings up their case against Microsoft and credits that case with Apple's success, particularly when it comes to the iPod, because they think their lawsuit encouraged Apple to support Windows.
Yeah. And honestly, the iPod wouldn't have been successful because most people wouldn't have been able to use it.
I was one of those people. I had an iPod, but I did not have a Mac.
Do we think Apple is going to make any concessions here?
I think they're going to argue that there are already some concessions on the way and kind of go forth in that direction so they don't have to give away too much too soon.
This messaging one, even though Apple will be fixing it to an extent later this year, that is a big one that really has made an impact on people. And we're going to talk about that stigma around those green bubbles and why people don't like them so much. But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
We were talking about this in planning for this episode and realized that a pretty significant chunk of this discussion has to be the blue versus green text bubble debate. Let's be honest. Do we roll our eyes and judge people whose text messages are green?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. This is a real thing and Apple knows it. Through emails that have come out during discovery in previous court trials, we know Apple has acknowledged privately that users, particularly younger ones, feel social pressure to have an iPhone in order to have blue bubbles like their friends. The blue bubbles are just more aesthetically pleasing, I think. iMessage has more features. But it's also funny that we prefer blue bubbles because the damn messaging icon is green, and yet we prefer the blue. Yeah.
Isn't there some kind of like reasoning behind that, though? Because that's also why a lot of the tech companies' logos are blue as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a soothing color.
Yeah.
It is. And it's the green that they picked specifically. It's foul to the human
acid
eye.
Acid green.
Yeah. It truly is. It's a bad green.
It really is.
I'm with you, though. For me, it's really just because I see that green bubble and I just know that I'm not going to be able to use certain features. And I'm sure the same thing happens on the other end, too. Like, one of my best friends has always been an Android user. And originally, it was just because her family had always been on Verizon and Apple was not available for the longest time on Verizon. And then even after they were, she was like, you know what? Like, I don't want to deal with the bullshit that's Apple. I'm just going to stick with Android. But right away, like, I just know that there are some things that I'm not going to be able to do, like thread conversations, which is a great feature that came out really recently. On the flip side, I think it's really cool that if I send her a voice note, it automatically transcribes on her end through Android. So she doesn't have to listen to it. I have to listen to every voice note she sends. So I sometimes have to wait until I'm free and can actually listen to something.
That's a good example of Apple being a pain in the butt when it comes to interoperability.
But also, like, they take up so much space, the voice notes. I was noticing that when I like ran out of space. I was like, why did I run out of space? It's like, I see all these damn voice notes that are clogging up.
The funny thing now is that they do describe voice notes or transcribe voice notes for you, but so long as they're from Apple devices.
And the funny thing is that I'm now realizing none of my friends on Apple, which is the rest of them, send voice notes.
Yeah, honestly, it's a pretty rare occasion for me to get a voice note from somebody, but sometimes they slap. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes, depending on the story somebody's trying to tell me, it's really good to hear it as a voice note.
I'm going to send you guys a voice note next time I'm enraged over
something. Do it. Oh, my God. I want to
If you're enraged,
it.
Yeah. Sometimes people send voice notes and they could have been a text. I'm like, I got to stop I'm doing.
This is like, you need to hear the inflection in the voice. If it's, to Laura's point, a good story.
I've sent Laura some like impressions before of people that her and I know. It's just too much fun to do sometimes.
Such a delight.
Not to mention, like, you can apply stickers to a text message. It's truly nice to know just that a text message has been delivered. And we've gotten so accustomed to seeing that messages have been delivered, whether it's through Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp.
It's quicker.
It's quicker. You can see when somebody's typing. To suddenly hit that wall with SMS, it feels different. I don't know how else to describe it.
I think the worst thing for me is when you're in a group text thread one person on an Android, and like I'm not mean to that person. Obviously, in our family text group, Mark is that person, although he's figured out a way around that, but definitely I used to kind of low-key give him shit, like affectionately, not super seriously, but there was a small part of me that was like, we can't use any features in that thread because of you.
Yeah.
But no, he's somebody who was actually impacted by some of Apple's moves, again, not just for the card, but he had been using an app called Beeper that was allowing Android users to send messages on Apple's iMessage platform. So the bubbles did come in blue, and it wasn't just for iMessage. Beeper is an app that allows you to basically keep all of your messaging platforms in one place. So you're not having to go from platform to platform to message people, which is kind of cool. But in this suit, the DOJ is accusing Apple of breaking Beeper, basically breaking the iMessage on Android solution on Beeper. So what Mark ended up doing was, we have an old MacBook Air, and he built his own server on it so that he can replicate what Beeper does. And all of his messages just go through that MacBook Air. So he's technically just using Apple's own software to accomplish it. So he's like, shut me down, bitches. I dare you. You can't, because I'm just using a Mac to do this.
But like you were saying, Apple was playing whack-a-mole with Beeper for a good month at least, where they were trying to break this, and they kept breaking it in different ways. I'm glad the Department of Justice is actually bringing this up, because Apple is like, oh, this hurts the security of the platform, so we can't allow Beeper, blah, 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 blah. Or Apple, you know, this is a self-inflicted wound. You could have just brought iMessage to Android years ago. But they have decided not to do that. And now they're paying for it through lawsuits like this, through that whole Beeper debacle, etc. I agree with you about the SMS and how like wonky it is when you get like, I had this group chat over the weekend. It was me, Pat, and one of our friends here who's on Android. And you know how everybody knows with iMessage, and I guess on Android too these days, you can double tap a message and add a like or a heart or whatever. When our friends liked a message, one of our messages, it replied thumbs up emoji 2, and then it quoted the message that he was liking. And then he liked another message and same exact thing. Thumbs up emoji two and quotes the message again. It looks so stupid.
That's me and my friend. Every time she responds, I am again. There are some features that I'm jealous of. She can use any emoji she wants to react. And for her, I'm basically just restricted to the basic ones that pop up when you hold down on a message. And I asked her what it looks like when I sticker react. And she says that it just shows up as an enlarged emoji. It's not even attached to a message.
Oh,
so it's messed up all around.
I was going to just tell you, they added that new add sticker feature where you can apply a sticker to a text. And here, I'll do it to one message on your on our chat right now, Pam. I did the star eyes because that's how I always look at you with star eyes. Oh. I like that. So you can use any emoji that you want. But yeah, it's not the same thing as I guess they have on Android.
No, I asked, is it attached to the message I sent it on? And she said, no, it just shows up at the end. And I was like, well, that's that dumb. No, like, sense. What's the point? Yeah. It looks like I'm sending you emojis randomly.
Is Pam off her rocker? What the hell is going on with her? Right. Is this a pocket tweet?
Yeah, but also we can talk about the diminished photo and video quality of text coming from Android phones to the iPhone when there's no reason for it. It's not as though Androids don't also have good cameras and microphones in them. Like, the industry, Apple is used to being like the big fish, you know, but honestly, a lot of their competitors have caught up in terms of their hardware and in a lot of cases their software. And Apple's been in a place for a really long time where they don't have to innovate as much because they were so far ahead, but they're not anymore. So it's really annoying to get this degraded image from someone's Android that I know takes perfectly good, high quality pictures, but I'm not allowed to receive them as high quality pictures because Apple is being a cock block. And I say all of this as a big Apple fangirl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love Apple.
That might be a limitation of SMS, but to your point, they could have started supporting RCS a while ago, and that supports the higher quality video and photos. But yeah, like one of my Android friends here, he wanted pictures of my backyard because he's working on his backyard. He wanted some inspiration. And I sent the photos to him over SMS, but I'm like, he's going to look at these and he's not even going to be able to see anything in them. Like, so sometimes he does communicate with us over Instagram. And I have a feeling it's because of some of that green bubble anxiety, particularly when it comes to group chats. He does that because I think he knows how terrible it is. But he also loves Android. And I don't push back. I'm like, you do you, boo. Like, you love your Android. I'm happy for you. I would never go to Android. I need this beautiful ecosystem with my work and all that. But I'm happy for people who genuinely love Android.
Yeah, same. I have no intentions of leaving the Apple ecosystem either.
Fuck no.
But I also don't want to be inconvenienced by the fact that Apple is unwilling to extend the seamless user experience to the third party, you know, devices that you're ultimately going to end up interacting with because you live in a fucking society and not everybody's going to have the same phone.
Yeah. I want to say one more thing about this green bubble thing, because when Apple announced that they would be adding RCS support later this year, thanks again to the EU, there are these TikToks going around. Oh, green bubbles are about to be a thing of the past because RCS is coming and it's no longer going to be SMS. I am willing to bet the future of millennial that Apple will continue to make RCS messages green, because like I said earlier, they know green is bad. Green means Android. Green is gross. And so Blue will still be exclusive to Apple's iMessages until the day comes, if it ever comes, that they put iMessage on Android. Those messages are going to be green, y'all. Those TikToks have been misleading. Mark my words.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's why the rest of the world defaults to WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They're ahead of... That's not common in America, but so many people I know abroad use WhatsApp, and it's weird when you don't have a WhatsApp.
Well, to your point, Hannah, who's listening live, said, I didn't even realize this was such an issue because I've lived outside the U.S. for most of the past 6 years and everywhere else I've lived, everyone just uses WhatsApp or Telegram.
There you go.
Our old hypable coworker, Richard, like, I only talk to him on WhatsApp. I can't get to him on iMessage. Like, they don't, which is bizarre to me because the phones come installed with iMessage. But that's just how it's always been over there in terms of the popularity of the messaging platforms. WhatsApp, by the way, owned by Meta.
Yeah, Apple probably doesn't love that. But yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on it and see how this is going. And, you know, I think I tend to agree that, you know, I don't know that everything in this lawsuit is going to stick. But I think there may be enough pressure to get Apple to evolve their position on some of these items. And they'll try to... This is what Apple does. And again, I'm an Apple fangirl, but I can also recognize that they're a little self-serving sometimes. And they'll announce it as though it's this new concept that nobody's ever done before. Because they'll do something to make it uniquely Apple and then announce whatever changes are coming. And, you know, they'll definitely punch up the language to make it sound very elevated, high-minded, and for the public good, you know?
And that it was their idea all along. Like, they added USB-C to iPhone because the EU forced them to use USB-C. You know, last year when they announced it, USB-C is coming to iPhone 15 Pro. Look at these fast speeds and blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, yeah, because the EU forced you. And when they announce RCS for iOS 18 later this year, it's going to be the same thing. RCS is coming to iPhone. Now you can text anybody in a more secure fashion. Like, oh, by the way, we just discovered this new secure messaging technology. And suddenly all those green bubbles are going to get a little bit better for you. We weren't forced into this at all. No way.
It's also like, come over here. We're more secure for the uninitiated or people that aren't as tech savvy, right?
Right. We'll have to watch WWDC together in the fall.
And then audibly grown.
In June.
Oh, is it in June?
It's in June. They just announced the dates today. What? June 10th to the 14th. WWDC is always in the summer.
Wait.
I think you're thinking of the iPhone event. That's the fall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. I'm thinking of the iPhone event. Excuse me. That's usually in the fall. But I was thinking we should watch for this announcement and see whether the demonstration on screen shows blue bubbles or green bubbles. We can take bets.
Again, mark my words, green is here to stay. All right. Well, we said today is going to be more of a tech focused episode, and we're going to talk about the Facebook poke. Apparently that's coming back in just a moment. But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. So I file this under WTF News. And by the way, we have a new WTF News installment for everybody over on our Patreon this week. So definitely check that out. Facebook claims that poke usage has increased by 13 times after making it more prominent on their app.
No.
Y'all remember the poke?
Oh, no.
It's back. Get ready to be poked.
You should have said that like Cornelius Fudge. He's back.
The poke's back. The poke is back. Get ready to be poked. So they announced that they recently improved the platform's suggestions on who to poke and also made it easier to find the poking page through search. Plus, they added the ability to poke a friend when you search for them on the social network. Facebook said these small changes led to that 13x spike in poking in the past month. Now, despite many of the Youngs not being around for the initial surge of poking, these young users are starting to embrace the feature, apparently, because Facebook says that more than 50% of pokes are coming from 18 to 29 year olds. And these people might be experiencing poking for the first time. So I guess they're just having the fun that we got to enjoy like 10 years ago. I went poking around on Facebook for this feature. It's not really standing out to me, but I did find a poking help doc on Facebook. And first of all, Facebook has never defined like what does it mean to poke somebody? They've kind of just like left it up to the individual users. Does it mean, am I harassing you? Am I just doing it for fun? Do I want to sleep with you? Do I think you're cute? What does poking mean to you two?
So when this was a big thing, my freshman year of college, like that's when I remember people using it the most. It was definitely to flirt with other people. And that was pretty much it.
How about you, Pam? What does poking mean to you?
Yeah, it does kind of feel like very school ground, playground, to Laura's point. I think it was kind of like, and again, if you like equate it to, say, tugging on pigtails, it kind of feels like it has that same connotation.
Mm-hmm.
So it always just kind of felt like an extraneous task you didn't want to do. But then if it was like somebody you were actually friends with, you're like, OK, I guess I have to poke you back now.
Right? And you just go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until somebody forgets or just gets tired of it.
Exactly.
So I love these instructions on Facebook's site. See and send pokes on Facebook. Step one, go to your pokes page, which is at facebook.com/pokes. Step two, search for a friend at the top of the page. Step three, select poke to the right of the name of the person you'd like to poke. But then this is the closing line of the support doc. If you don't want someone to poke you, you can block them. I'm like, not just blocking from pokes, eliminate them from your face.
Wow. Wait a second. You can restrict certain posts on your wall from people without blocking them. Why do you have to block somebody to stop them from poking you?
This is what's so hilarious. This escalates so quickly. It's like, if I get tired of Laura poking me, and Laura, I see you poked me 3 minutes ago. Thank you so much.
Yes.
This is legitimately the first poke I've had since October 15th, 2014. I'm going to poke you back right now.
Oh, boy. Give me that poke. Pam, I poked you too.
I see that. I guess that I'll poke back. And we're just going to be in an endless cycle of poking
endless
each other.
War.
No, if you all poke me again, I'm blocking you. I'm following Facebook's directions. Oh, I like the notification too. Laura T. poked you. So stupid. So
I also love looking at this poke page and seeing the last time I was poked by some people.
Yeah.
Where do you find that?
So
Facebook.com/pokes.
Yeah. Oh. It'll show you everyone who has poked you and it'll tell you the date and give you an option to poke them back. I have one. I feel terrible about this. John Thrasher poked me on December 4th, 2007, and I apparently never poked him back. So I'm going to poke him. I'm going to poke him back right now. That's how many years in the making? That's like 17 years in the making or something.
Isn't it amazing that poke has been in limbo on Facebook servers for close to two decades?
The funny thing is that Facebook's not going to give anybody a track record of the fact that they poked you 10 plus years ago, you know, or 10 years ago. So he's just going to think you randomly poked him.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I'm looking at some outstanding pokes here from October 2014, like I mentioned, and they all say poked you back. So I guess Laura's might say to John, Laura poked you back.
Poked you back. Okay.
Yeah, I've got a few sitting in my queue right now. The top three here, these are all three of these people are people I would have wanted to sleep with. I did not sleep with any three of these people, but these to me look like, they look like flirting pokes. Like I was definitely trying to get in their pants via the poke.
I definitely have one in here from like 2009. That was, I never responded to apparently. It was definitely a flirting poke, but That guy's married now, so I don't think I'm gonna reopen that.
Yeah, don't.
Communication. Don't. That would be weird.
I just poked one of my friends who lives here who listens to the podcast. Hi, Tyler. I'll poke his husband too. Hi, Mason.
At least he'll know the connotation behind the poking.
Right. Yeah, it'll all make sense when they listen to the show in a couple days.
And you're like, I poked both of you. I didn't just poke one of you. So
equal opportunity poker.
So yeah, this is fun. Pam, do you have any outstanding pokes? Did you pull up your poke page?
I'm looking right now and I do have some outstanding pokes. I guess I just got tired of the feature.
Yeah. Anyone you're like, oh, maybe I should poke them back right now?
Definitely not.
Okay.
I'm side-eyeing one of them right now.
Sounds like you should block them then.
It's like, oh, I haven't unfriended you yet.
It is funny how these social media features come and go. Speaking of poke, Facebook tried to launch a Snapchat clone and they called it poke. And this was after poking, as we've been discussing it today, failed. Mark Zuckerberg later said that the poke app that was the Snapchat clone was a joke. It was made during like a hackathon, but they really tried to make that thing take off.
Sure.
Yeah. I loved that they called it poke, though, just taking the old name of like a flop weird ass feature. The style of posts has changed too on Facebook. I mean, remember back in the day when the status was your name is.
Yeah. So if I was posting something, it would be like Laura T is waiting for Andrew and Pam to get online so they can record the podcast. And it was weird because of the prompt, you had to kind of come up with a post that fit it right. But a lot of times people didn't, which is probably why they changed it to begin with. But you would see a lot of posts that were mismatched. It would be like, Andrew Sims is, I really want Taco Bell right now. Someone give me Taco Bell.
Yeah. Like, which is so funny because it would have been so easy for, you know, that person to be like, is craving Taco Bell.
Right.
My favorite was always, I don't know about you guys, I've always had really dramatic family members who like to air out dirty laundry on Facebook. And it was always like, so-and-so is, I really wish that some people would mind their own business and keep their noses out of mine.
Yeah.
And then went on to detail exactly like what the context was. It was like, whoa, you had a lot to say today.
Yeah. I do remember back in the day, vaguely, getting really caught up in how to format a status so it fit that is mold. It was very frustrating, so I'm glad they eventually did open it up. And it is fun, like now when you go back onto Facebook on the stay feature, you can find like, Andrew is on the way to Vegas. Like I saw that a few days ago in my memories. Time is a flat circle. Getting back to poking itself for a minute. Grindr has a similar feature called a tap, and we all know what that means on Grindr. It means you're attractive and I want to sleep with you.
I want to tap that ass. That's what that means.
Oh, I didn't even connect that, but yeah, you're probably right. And in a post on Threads this week, Mark Zuckerberg said, I poked Priscilla and now we're married, which must have made HR cringe. Oh.
We all know that the guy at the very top has special rules applied to him. So I'm sure if anyone beneath him had posted something similar, it would have been a different kettle of fish. But
yeah,
I know. Did we get a chance to talk about like the poke being creepy? Because it's context dependent, right? Because there were some people back in the day that you would get kind of excited about if they poked you, right? Oh, they were thinking of me.
Yeah.
But then there were other people who you would get a poke and it would be like, oh, no.
Ew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It feels physical. I mean, when you think of a poke, like nobody likes to be poked in real life, you know? It's like, especially in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. You know,
it always just kind of I envisioned it as like a poke to the small of the back, which I also, again, don't want you touching without consent. So please don't.
Right.
Or like, what if it was somebody who, because I had this happen a few times, like if it's an older relative who doesn't understand the connotation and they're like, oh, I'm going to poke you. And they'll just like repeatedly poke you and you'll poke them back once to be like, okay, like we did it. And then they immediately hit you back and you're like, no, that's not what that's for.
Yeah, no, you're so right.
It just feels too intimate.
Yeah.
I know that sounds silly, but it does.
Good news. One of my friends here poked me back. I think things are getting serious.
Ooh.
We're going to poke each other a few times back and forth all night.
The pokes are coming back, but the green bubbles are here to stay. That's the upshot.
Yep. That's the lesson from today's episode. Well, Pam, what is coming up in After Dark today? I think we got another fun one for everybody.
Yeah. So I saw this TikTok about this person who was completing a task that I vividly remember being taught in grade school. And I know that you do, too. And I just was just kind of curious about exploring that. And I wanted to see if we could just talk about other habits that almost feel compulsory to us as adults that we wouldn't still do unless we were taught them young, specifically with regards to anything that was more of like a 90s campaign or like a 90s after school special type situation. So it should be a fun throwback discussion.
Poking feels compulsory now. I'm like, must poke back.
Resist. After Dark is part of Mega Millennial, which is the main show ad-free with After Dark attached to the end. If you're a Spotify user, you can tap into the show, then click the Patreon banner. You'll be able to access the Patreon audio benefits like Mega Millennial right within Spotify.
And some other Patreon benefits include our monthly variety shows. I just mentioned that we have a new one out this week. We're talking about some WTF news, including The Sims being turned into a movie produced by Margot Robbie. Hopefully I get to be a consulting producer on that as well, by the way, as the creator of The Sims video game. So there's lots of benefits always rolling out on our Patreon, including the ability to hang out in our virtual recording studio each week. And that lets you discuss the show in real time with fellow listeners. Shout out to everybody who's joining us tonight, like Lydia and Riley and Nicole and Meg and Cabby Blue. Plus, you get access to our planning docs, a new physical gift every year, and more. And if you prefer to support us elsewhere, there's also the Apple Podcast subscription where you'll get Mega Millennial. And both Apple Podcasts and Patreon offer free previews to our benefits thanks to 7-day free trials and a discount via the annual subscription option. By the way, poking update, the other person I poked has now texted me a screenshot of my poke and said, were you at least wearing protection? Everybody thinks it's sexual.
It for sure is. It's phallic, okay?
It is. Even look at the icon on the poke notification. I mean it's a hand, but it looks like a dick too. So it's time for some recommendations. And first of all, just want to say that a couple weeks ago, I came out of the closet and revealed that I have been sleeping with a Squishmallow. I was thrilled to hear from listeners that they too have Squishmallows and love them. Lauren Pam also came out of the closet, and all three of us posted photos of our Squishmallows on our social media. So check that out, Instagram.com/millennialshow.
They're all very cute.
I wanted to recommend Quiet on Set, which is the big buzzworthy docuseries that's out now on Max and Discovery Plus. I would check the trigger warnings for this, but I think that it's going to be of particular interest for millennials because it does deal with malpractice that was happening on the set of some of your favorite Nickelodeon television shows, ranging from the mid to late 90s all the way through the 2020s. And this was definitely a tough watch, but I think that it's sparking up some good conversation online. And I know that the three of us have all watched it or parts of it, and we're thinking about potentially discussing it further on this show in some capacity. So if you want to be prepped for if that comes, then it might be a good time to tune in and see what all was said on there.
Yeah, this is one of those documentaries that everybody is talking about, and I had to start watching it after I heard like everybody talking about it over the past weekend. Super interesting and sad. Speaking of things that a lot of people are talking about, I've been obsessed with this new game called Balatro. Laura, I don't know if this is on your radar because it's already getting some Game of the Year contender talks.
Oh, no.
This is a poker-themed roguelike deck-building game on several platforms, including Nintendo Switch, which is what I've been playing it on. They said it's coming to iOS too, which is dangerous for me. I am freaking addicted to this game. It's all I've been doing in my free time. There's been no reading or other video game playing. I have always enjoyed video poker. This one, you're shooting for points, and you use a variety of different jokers to score as many points as possible. Again, it is poker themed, so if you're familiar with poker, you'll like it. But oh man, it's so addicting. There's so many different strategies you can take with it. I've only won one damn round of this game too. And yet I still can't get enough of it. I'm like, how do I beat these other decks? Like, I want to win so badly. It's really fun. It's also one of these games you can jump in and out of pretty easily. I love games like that where you can just sit down for 20 minutes and knock out a session or two. So definitely check it out. Balatro. It's but be warned, you might become addicted to this game like I am.
Yeah, I'm sensing a new addiction in my future because I get really addicted to games like that. I am someone who can sit down and play solitaire for quite a while.
Oh, you'll lose your shit over this then if you like solitaire.
I know. That's why I'm kind of excited. I'm definitely downloading it as soon as we're done here, and I will let you know how I fare. Okay. My recommendation comes from Beauty of Joseon, which is actually a brand Pam turned me onto because she got me their really, really good sunscreen for my birthday this past year because she knew I was looking for a good sunscreen and I wanted to try a Korean brand because, you know, a lot of like bullshit here. But basically, the US's ability to use newer updated formulas for sunscreen is really limited. So I was interested in trying some Korean brands. And because I liked the sunscreen Pam sent me so much, I decided to try their Glow Deep Serum. And I got it the other day. I have to say, it's really, really good. I was looking for a new kind of glowy serum. I usually use Glossier's Future Dew, but this is a really, really good option for someone who may be looking for something a little bit cheaper than Glossier's version. What I like about it is it almost doubles as a primer because stuff stays put, which is really, really nice. And it also gives you a really, really pretty glow for the finish. So highly recommend Beauty of Joseon. I never know if I'm saying that right. Am I saying that right, Pam?
I think so. Okay. It's either Joseon or Joseon. I feel like we're not the people to ask, but maybe somebody Joseon listening will write in. It does sound fancier.
All right. Well, make sure you're following the show in your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode and leave us a review in Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. Spotify also offers podcast listeners the option to submit feedback right within an individual episode page. You'll see a box under the Spotify episode player that says, "What did you think about this episode?" that you can use to send us feedback.
To stay in touch with us, email millennialshow@gmail.com or use the contact form or the confessional form over on millennialshow.com. Additionally, you can reach out to us via social media. We're Millennial Show on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Threads. And over on TikTok, we are at Millennial Pod.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. After Dark, we'll start in a moment for Apple Podcasts and Patreon subscribers. I'm Andrew.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Pamela.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.